The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The late 1960s were a golden age of air travel. Spacious legroom, glamorous flight attendants, and delicious meals on every flight. And a rash of violent hijackings. Some were politically motivated, while others were fueled by greed. The most famous and mysterious hijacker of all took control of a 727 with nothing more than a black briefcase, a handwritten note, and a pair of sunglasses. He got his money and his parachutes, then disappeared into the night, never to be heard from again. Did he die in the Washington wilderness, or did he manage to make an escape with his bag of cash? This week's episode is D.B. Cooper.
In the night, your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
I feel like I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Go on.
Do you have any interest in skydiving?
Hail to the no.
Okay. That's what I was assuming.
No. No.
I also don't.
I have friends that went, and initially I said, yes, sign me up. But actually, my old employer was a pilot, and he did flying lessons with some of the employees as kind of a fun job perk. And such a fun time to, you know, ride shotgun pretty much flying these planes and take the yoke and, you know, move, go up and down.
But like a small little plane?
It was a Beechcraft Bonanza. So it's a single engine, but it has retractable gear. So, you know, you see like the little Cessna 172s where the gear doesn't go up or down and they have, yeah. You know. So it's bigger than that. And I think it seats like four people and maybe one in the back. But
even those, I don't want to ride in.
Yeah. And the only reason why I rode it is because he was the most meticulous person just in his daily life. So I thought
you felt safe.
Yeah. I felt safe. And he had this whole checklist he made. And, you know, doing the pre-flight, it's so much work to even get the plane. You got to tow it yourself. You know, it's so much work to even get the plane turned on, and you check the gas and you check the avgas. Apparently different than jet fuel, you learn, and you know check all these things. And I thought, okay, well, if you're that meticulous getting it out, but even flying at like 3,000 and 6,000 feet, you're too fucking high up. That's so high.
How far are you when you jump out of a plane?
That's a great question. I really, may I check?
Go for it.
So I have this theory that Google just knows what you want. So I typed how high skydive and it says 13,000 feet.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was at 3,000.
So 10,000 more. And yeah, I just don't really. It's not that it scares me. It just doesn't interest me.
It seems here's the thing. I have a ton of respect for it. I think the people that do it, you know, they would describe to you, you could get no other high, right?
But sometimes, I don't know, our friend Rob went the other day and he's like, I've had more thrills with a cold shower in the morning.
Oh,
like,
really?
I think it's depending on where you go and stuff. True. And maybe how high up you are.
That's true.
But I don't know. I don't know. It's just never interested me.
I'm trying to do a new theory in life, which is let people enjoy things. And if you want to skydive, you go do that.
Oh, yeah. I have no problem.
Doesn't mean want to skydive. And there's shit that I do that I'm sure people are like, I would never, ever do that. Like ride a motorcycle or perform on stage in front of people. Those things, some people would say I'd 100% would rather skydive than do either of those. So, I mean, I get it. I get the thrill. I personally would. No, I jumped off of a boat in Cabo and that was very tall.
How tall?
It wasn't. It wasn't tall, but it felt like.
Was it like just like a normal boat?
No, it was like a yacht. It was like, I'm not some fun jet setter. We split it between like 50 people. So it was quite economical, but it was about, I mean, it was not the first. It was
like taller than your house?
Yeah, probably.
That's not like a shabby. Not too shabby.
Yeah, probably about as tall as a one story.
More than
house.
A high dive at a pool?
The highest high dive, probably. It was pretty high up.
Like, if you're watching Olympic diving.
It was probably...
The highest high dive they dive off of? That high up?
It was probably 50 feet up.
I think those high dives are taller than that.
Okay, so
and
maybe
I'm always,
not that.
I'm always... feel very nervous for them bouncing on the edge of those little diving boards.
Well, I hucked myself over the edge and there was not a diving board. It was just like, if you want to go up and jump off the side of the boat.
I would have done that. I mean,
it was fun.
Yeah.
It was one of
well,
those.
Well, then maybe you'd have fun jumping out of a plane.
I didn't want to do it, but then I did it. So that was my love of roller coasters was born out of that when I was a little kid. Well, I love my sister, but she said, are you going to be a big baby and not go on it? And I said, no, I'm going to go. Even though I was so scared, I probably was going to pee my pants. And it was so much fun, and I'm so glad I did it. Now I'm obsessed with roller coasters, and everywhere I go, I try to go.
I used to love roller coasters, and now they make me super nauseous, so I can't go on them.
Motion sick?
Yeah, you know I puked all over myself in the Harry Potter.
That's right.
But all of them, I just get motion sick really easily now, so I can't really...
Oh,
do anything like that. Even driving in a car makes me want to throw up a lot of times. Yeah. Well, someone that had no problem.
Dude, this guy was bold.
Diving right on out of this thing was the guy we're talking about this week, D.B. Cooper.
Well, they say fortune favors the bold and you just, man, the 60s were a time. You just walked
for
up.
For a lot of reasons.
1971, but the late 60s, early 70s, it was a damn free for all in the sky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that. Didn't stop there.
I mean, they later passed legislation in like the 80s of like maybe you should show an identification before getting
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody could some... just walk right into an airport.
And they'd say,
back
what was your
day?
Name? And you could just go, you know, Bananas Foster. And they would go, all right, hop on board.
Yeah, you could smoke on planes. That's crazy to me.
I'd throw somebody out of a plane for that. It's such a confined space. Although yeah.
Back then, everyone smoked.
Everyone smoked.
I mean, did you watch Mad Men?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, the doctors are smoking.
Constantly.
Everybody's smoking. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And this week we're talking about D.B. Cooper. This has been an interesting one to research, and we had quite a few requests for this one.
Yes,
so,
this was highly, highly sought after.
So let's get into it. The afternoon before Thanksgiving, November 24th, 1971, a man walked up to the counter at the Portland, Oregon airport. He used cash and bought a $20 one-way ticket on a Northwest Orient Airlines plane bound for Seattle. He told the agent his name was Dan Cooper. The media would later mistakenly refer to him as D.B. Cooper, a name that would forever follow this mysterious man.
It's fun when you just call things the wrong thing forever, and that becomes the name. You know, D.B. Cooper's never...
No, that wasn't his name.
No. They just ran
but they were like, you know what? We like this better than Dan, and we're going to stick with it.
They're like, Dan's kind of blah. DB's got a little panache
yeah,
to
DB
it.
Yeah, DB could be anything.
What does it stand for?
Dickbag. Dickbag Cooper. Maybe that was his name, and he was like, this is my one chance to not go by Dickbag and have to explain this to someone, so I'm going to go by Dan.
I will say I saw somebody's name on the internet today. It was, you know, in a work-ish context, not really work-related, but this person's last name was Dick Hutt.
Mm, that's unfortunate.
And I don't know if you pronounced it Dickett.
Was it D-I-C-K-H-U-T?
Mm-hmm.
I would call that Dick Hutt.
Yeah, wouldn't you? I think if two words are together, you say them, you know, if it's a...
I would.
Yeah, surely.
They may be like, it's Dicahoot.
Dicute. But Dicahoot just, I'm...
You change that.
I'm not...
I would.
Oh, for sure. I'm not an adult, but I... Because I laughed at that just... And I
texted
it to like five
people. I think anyone, adult, child, would laugh at that.
It's like, someday I'll be emotionally mature enough not to be like...
I hope I'm never emotionally mature enough not to laugh at Dicahoot.
I look forward to continued just childishness and a death after that.
Well, Cooper appeared normal, dressed in a smart suit and carrying an attaché case, ordinary for the times. Along with his suit, he wore a lightweight black raincoat, a dark clip-on tie from JCPenney, and a mother-of-pearl tie clip.
He's a classy guy. I'd let him on an airplane.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we glossed over the fact that this ticket was
$20. That's true. That's true. Which
that's
at the time,
wild.
It may have been like $50.
I mean,
of the
sometimes
time.
On Southwest, you can get close to that. For a one way to Portland, if you hit it right, you're it's like
Portland
$57.
Portland to Seattle is almost like Dallas to Austin, yeah. Right? It's not super far, or like Dallas to New Orleans.
Well, he was described by witnesses as an average looking businessman, standing about 6 feet high, weighing between 170 to 180 pounds. He was white, had brown eyes, and appeared to be in his 40s.
Which sort of average Joe for the time. Mm-hmm. Don Draper looking.
Please don't ever call Don Draper average in my presence again. John Hamm.
He's
is
so hot.
Anything but average.
He's beautiful.
He is drop dead gorgeous.
Work of art. His face.
Also, he is, not only is he extremely talented actor, he is very funny. Most people don't know about him, but he is an extremely funny person.
He's on 30 Rock.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. He's the doctor.
Yes.
I made Paris watch that episode. So, because every time I said that he lived in a bubble, he would know what I was talking about.
Oh, there you go. Well, Cooper was the last person to board Northwest Airlines flight number 305. Accounts vary as to which seat he took. Some say it was 18E, while others say 15C. Nevertheless, he took a seat near the back of the plane and ordered a bourbon and soda while the plane was waiting to take off. He paid the flight attendant and enjoyed his drink.
Drinking and smoking and wearing a suit on a plane.
That's the 60s, man, or 71. Shortly after takeoff, around 3 p.m., the man then slipped the flight attendant a piece of paper as he smoked a cigarette, a common practice at the time. No stranger to attempted pickups from lonely travelers, the flight attendant, Florence Schaffner, took the slip of paper and tossed it in her pocket. As she was serving other passengers, the man stopped her and gently told her,
"Miss, you better look at that note. I have a bomb."
Florence was horrified, but the passenger asked her to sit beside him. When she did, he opened his attaché case, revealing not the normal contents of papers and business documents, but instead what appeared to be a bomb. There were 8 red cylinders, all connected by red-coated wires. Florence later said she also saw a battery, and by all accounts, she assumed this was an active bomb.
Do you think you could recognize a bomb in an attaché case? Like, you, or a bomb anywhere?
If someone opened a briefcase and showed this description of things to me, I would assume it was a bomb. Who am I to question it? I've never made a bomb. I don't know.
If someone says this is a bomb, I would believe them. I'm just saying, you could really take apart.
Sure.
An alarm clock?
I do not think this was an actual bomb.
That was my question. I was going to say, you could crack open like an alarm clock and glue things to, you know, batteries, yeah, and whatnot, and then it would look bombish.
I think that's probably what he did. As a flight attendant in this situation, I'm not going to question him, though.
I would assume.
Even if I think it's fake, this man is clearly unhinged to be presenting this.
Threatening. He's threatening
on
somehow.
A flight. When Florence asked what he wanted, the passenger made it clear. $200,000 in
negotiable American currency.
About $1.2 million in today's money. He also specifically asked for all $20 bills. Cooper then demanded 4 parachutes and a fuel truck on the tarmac in Seattle, waiting to refuel the plane for the next leg of his planned trip.
So he kind of, this was doesn't seem to be a off the cuff, I think I'm going to take this plane over. He knew what he wanted, and he came with the bomb in hand.
I think if you show up with a bomb on a plane, you've planned out some stuff.
Something.
You're a planner. You're
at
a
least.
Planner.
You put everything in the attaché case. You took the time to fill your case.
You didn't just wake up that morning and say, you know what?
I'm going to go to Seattle.
What am I going to do today? Maybe hijack a plane. I don't know. Let's just throw together some things I've got laying around the house. Make a bomb. I think he had planned this out to a degree. Cooper sent Florence up to the cockpit to tell the pilots of his demands. Airline hijackings had spiked in the 1960s and 70s, so flight crews were not completely unprepared. According to Vox, between 1968 and 1972, more than 130 American airplanes were hijacked. At some points, there could be as many as 1 hijacking per week.
So this is insane. So many.
Yeah.
Because, and if you think about it, air travel has become way more common now than it was back then. So
it's become way safer too.
Well, definitely. But there's just more people flying and more airlines and more planes in the sky versus back then. And to think that that was such a high ratio of hijacked.
There was a good chance if you were flying on a plane, if you were a business traveler and you had to travel, if you had to fly once a week for a month.
Yeah.
There's a good chance you're on a plane that gets hijacked.
For sure.
That's wild.
Have you ever seen The Out-of-Towners with Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis?
No, I don't think so.
Everybody, this is a public service announcement. They did a remake with Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn, which was, I mean, not even close. The Out-of-Towners with Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis is one of the best comedy films of all times, like writing-wise, especially, and Jack Lemmon's just such a serious actor, and he's so serious about it. But it's about this Ohio businessman who's getting considered for a promotion in New York, so he and his wife are thinking they're going to move there, so he brings her along with his to his final interview, and everything that can go wrong goes wrong for them. You know, they're bumped from their flight, they don't have food for them, they get stuck at the airport, they don't have a hotel, yada yada. And so at the very end, they're finally, okay, we're like so excited, we're going to fly back home, and then it gets hijacked. And that's the bit for the time, was that was so common that it was like a joke in this movie, which was made in the probably late 60s, early 70s.
Is there a hijacking on Airplane?
Oh, I haven't seen the whole thing of Airplane.
Talk about a great comedy film.
So good.
Leslie Nielsen.
He's amazing. Again, that's so serious.
That's why they cast him in that role.
He's so good.
I use that example in my improv classes all the time.
Yeah, you think about Leslie Nielsen can sell it.
That's the type of commitment you should play all your characters with, no matter how absurd, because that's why it's funny. That's why they cast him in that role. They wanted a dramatic actor to be playing this absurd character, because it would hit so much harder.
It certainly did. Cary Elwes, when he plays in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, he's very Shakespearean and theatrical.
Well, Brendan Corner, author of The Skies Belong to Us, A History of American Skyjackings. I like that phrase, by the way.
I like a portmanteau.
Says that hijackings can be broken into three distinct eras. One, people wanting to go to Cuba. Two, people asking to be taken elsewhere, like Rome or Europe. And three, people demanding ransom money.
So there was, and the Cuban Revolution was going on at the time, and so that was kind of ubiquitous. And I think that's what they say in the Out-of-Towners movie. They said this plane's going to Cuba.
Classic. Well, this was clearly a case of the third. The passenger who called himself Dan Cooper was not shouting about going to Cuba or demanding a landing anywhere other than the plane's intended destination. He simply wanted cash and a way out. After Florence told the cockpit of the situation and returned to Mr. Cooper, she noticed he had put on dark wraparound sunglasses. The flight crew alerted authorities on the ground that the plane was now a victim of a hijacking. In response, the pilots were told to stay in the air while authorities were scrambled on the ground.
That's pretty cool, though. You got this. You know what? That adds a certain level of panache if you put sunglasses on.
Yeah. I wonder at what point he realized he didn't have them on. He's like, fuck, I'm going to start this whole thing with my sunglasses on. Okay, when she comes back, I'm going to have them on, and she's going to be like, whoa, he put on sunglasses.
He's like, I guess you could say this plane was skyjacked. Whips on the sunglasses.
Yeah, and the Who just plays. Who? I don't even know if that song had been written at that time. For 2 hours, the plane circled the landscape about Seattle, allowing for emergency workers to congregate at the Seattle airport. In an interview with New York Magazine, flight attendant Tina Mucklow described Cooper during this time as normal and cool.
He wasn't nervous. He seemed rather nice. He was never cruel or nasty. He was thoughtful and calm all the time. Well, at least he wasn't.
Yeah.
I guess he could have been meaner.
Could have been worse. Could have taken over the whole damn flight.
Or, tied people up or hit them. Sounds like he was pretty.
He just wanted his money and a parachute.
If you have a bomb in an attaché case, you don't have to be violent.
No, people respect you.
You put on the sunglasses and you point at the case.
Honestly, if he wasn't wearing the sunglasses, I think they would have been like, he was a dick. He was a huge dick. I wanted nothing to do with him.
He made eyes at me the whole time. He could have been anything. He'd been doing anything.
Maybe he was sleeping. And he was just like, I'd like to take a nap before what is going to be a real crazy night for me. So
it's about to be a day. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. I'm going to have another long day. Then it's Black Friday. I got to get my shopping done.
I got to go to the wife's parents. I got to go to my parents.
Two Thanksgivings.
There's so much turkey to be eaten.
And then I'd need all this money for all the deals on Friday.
Yeah, That's why he's doing this. He's just a Black Friday shopper. That's right. He's like, I have got my eye on a new attaché case.
This one is trash.
It's alligator skinned.
You have no idea.
It's $200,000. Right. Just wanted the exact amount
the
for his
finest
new
case.
Attaché case. Well, Cooper remained cool as a cucumber, even ordering another bourbon and soda. And, after paying, offered to let Florence Schaffner keep the change. That is a very madman move of him.
Hey, sweetheart. Keep the change.
Hey, doll face.
You think he looks down over the sunglasses?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He would note various things out the window, including a nearby Air Force base, which he correctly identified as McCord Air Force Base, near the Seattle-Tacoma, or SeaTac, airport. He also noted the times the plane was flying above other cities, including Tacoma. Some would later speculate if Cooper was a local resident, given his familiarity with the area.
He just wanted to be a tour guide. He's, everyone shut up, I'm going to give you a tour.
He's auditioning.
On your left, you'll see.
Some people think that meant he might have been a local. Others say if he was a local and hijacked a plane in the area from which he was, like, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to go to DFW, first
like
of all.
Shitting where you're eating.
Don't DM me. I'm not going to hijack any plane. If I was, though, it wouldn't be out of DFW because the chances of me running into someone there are much higher.
Yeah.
It would be Love Field because that airport is leaps and bounds above DFW.
I love Love Field.
Yeah.
Love Field is so convenient.
It's very easy to get in and out of.
I feel like the security is always very fast, even with a really long line.
It's
although
small.
Did I tell you when I was going to Tennessee with my family and I got there? I usually get there an hour before boarding. And it was, I think they had added some sort of extra layer of security at Love Field. So the lines were long and I had the distinct pleasure of being in the TSA line with families that were just ripped apart by, we should have left earlier for the airport.
Oh, yeah.
It was like always, and it's always one spouse was optimistic and the other spouse was like, no, there's no way we're going to make that flight. Listen, we can get on up to 10 minutes before. Yeah, the flight leaves in 25 minutes, Craig. Do you think we're going to get through this long line in 25 minutes? I told you we should have gotten up 30 minutes earlier. It was just like,
did they
lives.
Make it?
No.
Lives. They didn't make the flight?
No, we were in that line for 30 more minutes. Lives were torn apart.
Did you make your flight?
Hell yeah, I get there an hour before boarding.
Oh, these are people that hadn't got there.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So they were on a different flight. They were just very upset getting stuck in security. It was, I hope.
I have never missed a flight. Come close many times.
Oh, see, that's what I said on this trip. I said, I have never missed a flight in my life, and I'm not starting now. I'm leaving extra early for the airport.
But back in the day, you could get there as the plane was taking off.
Pretty
and
much.
Still get on. So, and if it wasn't back then, I would have missed the flight. But even since rules have changed, I have not missed
a
flight
ever. Just do an hour before boarding for domestic and then an hour and a half for international. Yeah.
Well, the airline agreed to pay the ransom, mostly concerned with the safety of the passengers and crew. The FBI assisted in obtaining the ransom money, making photocopies of all the bills and ensuring they began with the same letter, L, so that they would be traceable in the future.
I can't believe he didn't ask for unmarked bills or like bearer bonds. You know, something that couldn't be.
He was a planner. He wasn't all the way thinking through planner.
Yeah, like a
though.
Genius. Because obviously if you ask for 20s, they're going to mark every single one of them with a serial number. That's why bearer bonds don't exist anymore. That's what they stole in Die Hard.
Oh.
They're basically a piece of paper that says whoever holds this piece of paper gets this much money and there's no trace.
Did they exist in this 1971?
Yeah, I think they outlawed them in the 90s, I think.
Oh, well, then he should have asked for those.
Or outlawed them, got rid of them, yeah.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Cooper was clearly not interested in harming any of the passengers. In fact, for most of the flight, the other passengers were not even aware of a hijacking. The crew told the other passengers that there was a brief delay due to minor technical difficulties.
Was that on 30 Rock? 30 more minutes going to be about another half an hour.
Dude, I was once on a tarmac for upwards of 2 hours.
Oof.
And when you're on the tarmac, the air doesn't work.
No.
And you can't go to the bathroom.
It's torture.
I was like, a riot is going to break out on this,
seriously,
on this plane.
It's thankfully none of the flights we just were on got delayed, but it's a meat market. I mean, it's just human bodies sweating.
Yeah, planes
smell.
Are disgusting.
May I tell you this brief story? Coming back from Spain, we were in our seats. So it's the 2-3-2 configuration, uh-huh, of the airplane. So we're in the two seats against the window. A guy to my left, he and his wife are from Germany. They spoke German and not really proficient in English. And they put his only carry-on bag was a knapsack that was roughly a little bit larger than a woman's purse, about a tote bag size. And he put it in the overhead because it was the only bag he had. So he didn't have to put anything under his feet. This guy, and I'm going to just say what he was a New England Patriots fan because he had a shirt on of New England Patriots.
You're responding to these DMs.
I'm just saying. I can't change what shirt he was wearing. That's what, this is factual.
Okay.
This is what he was wearing. And he goes, is this your bag? And the guy just looks at him because he doesn't know what he's saying. And he's like,
oh, the German guy is not the Pats fan.
No, no,
the
no.
Guy, the German, a separate guy.
Correct. The German guy, okay, gotcha, sitting in his seat. He's opened a tablet. He's reading, whatever. He's having a nice time. This guy walks down the aisle,
right,
with a suitcase.
The Pats fan.
A rolly suit, like a big rollerboard. And he said, is this your bag? And the guy just stares at him. And he takes the bag out. And then the guy, the German guy stands up and puts the bag in. And he's just like shaking
his
head.
Probably also has no idea what the guy's asking him.
Correct. And he's shaking his head no. And the guy's like, you have to take this out. You have to. And of course, Paris and I were in the middle of a conversation. I was like, shush, shush, shush. I have to hear what happens. The flight attendant, who was such a nice lady, because I had a gluten-free meal, and she was just so kind and thoughtful the whole time. Shout out to the, I think her name was Sharon on Delta Airlines. And she comes up the aisle, and this Patriots fan guy goes, again, this is not all Patriots fans, but this specific one. And he goes, I need your help, please. I really need your help. And she's like, oh my gosh, yes, what can I do? And he said, I told him he had to take his bag out, and he won't take his bag out, and I want to put my bag up there.
Why does he think his bag can't be up there?
That's what she said. He's only brought one item. She goes, sir, is this the only bag you brought? And the guy just shrugs and like looks at her. And she goes, if you only bring one bag, the small one can go up there. This guy goes, I told him he had to move his bag and he won't move it. Will you tell him he has to move his bag? And the flight attendant was just like, no. And this guy was just so salty.
So entitled.
Well, and he just sounded like a little kid.
A bratty little child.
He sounded like a little baby. And then she said, no, you can't put your bag there. And so he had to go to the back of the plane. She said, you figure it out or we'll check your bag. I don't know what to tell you. But just that, I told him he had to move his bag and he won't move his bag. And now he had to put.
Kind of like when they don't win a Super Bowl.
Kidding.
But
I will say,
DM us.
Please don't DM us because they always win.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Let me
talk to
up.
Us about our team. We haven't won in fucking years.
So I'm going to look up the standings for the season and who they think is going to go to the Super Bowl. The Patriots.
It's every year. It's
who
the
do
Patriots.
They think is going to win?
The Patriots. Yeah.
they think all of it.
Yes.
That's the great joy of being like Lindsay Power is a great Pats fan. She's a comedian we do comedy with.
She's a Pats fan.
She's a huge Pats
fan.
Yeah.
She named her kid Patrick.
And the other one's Brady.
Yeah. And she has a Pats tattoo.
She's amazing.
She's dedicated.
You know what? I don't have a Cowboys tattoo, so I'm obviously...
No, and I didn't name my child Romo or
I'm
any
gonna name
other...
my kid Aikman.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
You know what? I'm surprised I've never heard of a kid named Aikman.
That's true.
I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah. You know, Aikman, Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy or... what was the...
Emmitt Smith? Michael Irvin.
No, the famous coach back in the day that always wore the suit and the hat.
Landry. There's a lot of Landrys.
Tom Landry. Yeah, there's Landrys. Yeah.
Yeah.
On Friday Night Lights, there's a Landry. Always. Ooh, I wonder if that's why they named that character Landry.
You like Friday Night Lights, right? I never watched it. It's good.
Oh, it's good. It's very good. Well, skip season two. We don't talk about that season.
Oh, no.
It's when the writer strike was happening, and it is.
They're like Curb Your Enthusiasm
wheels
style.
Off.
They just let them improvise.
It's wild. I mean, watch it just because you're like, what is happening? Complete like insane storylines get introduced that are never mentioned again for the rest of the show.
Season three, they're like, we don't talk about that.
I mean they literally don't. It's crazy. Well, all 36 passengers were freed as soon as the flight landed at its intended destination in Seattle. As the plane was parked, Cooper had all the window shades in the aircraft lowered, fearing he may be the target of a police sniper.
So he's thinking something's through.
When the money was provided, Cooper was satisfied. But when he was presented with the military-grade parachutes the FBI initially provided, he rejected them. He wanted civilian-style parachutes, and so police had to ask for assistance from a local skydiving school in Issaquah to provide parachutes that were to Cooper's standards. According to CBS, the Issaquah Skydive Center had recently purchased the chutes from a man named Earl Cossey, a middle school algebra teacher who, with 4,000 jumps under his belt, was also a veteran parachutist. Despite Cooper initially refusing the chutes the airline provided, wanting them to come from a private party and not the military itself, the chutes Cossey had packed were also, in fact, military-issue NB-6 chutes. So all that frickin' runaround, and he gets the same chutes that he had in the first place.
It's so strange. Well, they do say that he turned, so they give him the chutes, and he turns and he unzips it, a pocket where the Packer's certification would be. So they're like, he clearly knows...
He had some knowledge of how to work a chute.
At least, yeah, the components of a chute, or to check and see who packed it or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, the question is just why does he care?
Well, military, from my limited research into a chute.
We get into it a little bit later, too.
Military chutes are harder to maneuver. Mm-hmm. So if he knew that, he may have wanted a civilian type chute, because that's probably what he had only jumped with, unless he was in the military. Refueling the 727 did not go as smoothly as either Cooper or the FBI would have liked. Although the passengers had been freed, the crew remained on board, and Cooper still had his trusty bomb-filled attaché case. As the refueling truck attempted to fuel up the aircraft, there was an issue with the truck's pump. Cooper and the crew had to wait on the plane while another fuel truck was called over. Cooper was slightly suspicious, but remained calm nevertheless. That fuel truck pumped the plane full of fuel. And Cooper even waited while a third truck was called over once the second truck was empty.
So, yeah, it could have been some kind of stall tactic by the FBI. But by all accounts, it literally the truck just didn't work. Can you imagine being the guy trying to fuel up? Like, I'm so sorry. Please don't blow this plane up.
Everyone's like, you have one job.
Come on, Dale. He's like, I'm trying.
I do wonder why no attempt was made to get this guy off the plane. Zero attempt was made. Apparently back then, airlines in these situations could make the call if they wanted to negotiate with a terrorist, basically, instead of the FBI. And the airline, they're like, yeah, we'll pay him. So they pay him. But like, there's all these stall tactics going on. Yeah, he might have a bomb, but like, no negotiations were tried to make to get him off the plane. Mm-mm. They were like, nope, we're going to send the crew back up with this guy with, arguably a bomb, mm-hmm. and that'll be it.
And even if he's happy with the money, the bomb could accidentally go off and still
kill. It just seems like in today's age, every effort would be made to get this guy off the plane before, and that would be like the last ditch effort, or the last solution is to like let him leave again.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, at least he wasn't trying to fly the plane himself. And I guess in that case, he needed the crew. Like, why kill the crew that's trying to take you to Mexico or wherever you want to go?
I would be worried once he got to his intended destination, then he would kill them, because otherwise they've all seen his face.
That's true. They know too much.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a strange that they didn't say, oh, well, you know, the pilot is not feeling well. We have this other pilot who's really an FBI agent come on the plane and stab him with a ballpoint pen or something, you know, whatever cool.
And the flight attendant, the guy who drives up the parachutes and the cash, just drives up next to the plane. The flight attendant comes down the stairs, gets it all out of his car and takes it back up. If I was that flight attendant, I'd be like, I'm not getting back on this fucking plane. See y'all. Mm-hmm.
Just take off,
you
running.
Know, or send her back in with something, or send in an FBI agent with her. I don't know. It just seemed like these guys were on their own.
So later on, there's a mention of the airline's insurance company. And by this was 1971, and the rash of skyjackings had begun in 1968. They probably had skyjacking insurance.
So if something happened, they were covered?
Yeah.
What about the lives lost?
There's that.
I don't think insurance covers it covers it, but it doesn't bring them back.
No, it doesn't make up for it. No.
Families of those people aren't going to care.
Correct. There are actuarial books that say how much parts of you are worth.
Oh.
Like if your thumb gets cut off.
My ass is priceless.
Girl. They're like, you look up, it says asses, you know, $400,000, Chrissy's ass, priceless. But seriously, if you like, say there's a machining accident and you get your thumb cut off, it's worth $500,000, but a pinky is worth like 85 grand.
Yeah, it's because your thumb is, you lose a thumb, that impacts everything. You got to have your thumb. That's what separates us from the animals. Otherwise, you're just demoted. You're no longer a human. You're just getting demoted down to a monkey.
Yeah. Just this. We just watched that episode where the lady gets her pinky toe cut off on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's just a pinky toe. He's
my
like,
pinky toe.
It's the cutest one.
That character that was so obnoxious.
Because she's the one that is the heckler.
Yes. Yes.
That's what I don't get about people that heckle is just the lack of self-awareness that nobody else is making noise but you. Do you as the heckler think, wow, everyone in this audience must be so shy and I'm the only brave soul who's talking through this? Or do you just not care?
I think it's that one.
The second one.
Well, I think
or notice.
Drinking has a lot to do with it.
Oh, yes.
From my experience seeing hecklers in the crowd.
Oh, yes.
I also think that they think they're funnier than the people on stage.
They
and whatever
never
they have to say is going to be get a much bigger laugh than whatever is happening on stage.
They never are.
No, I've never once said, you know what, God, that heckler needs to be up here. I'm going to go take his seat and he can come up here and do the rest of this show. Luckily, improvisers don't get heckled as nearly as much as stand-ups, but it has happened.
True. And I saw a stand-up one time go, here's the microphone. Go ahead. And the guy was like, no, I'm good. He's like, no, you're funny. Here you go. Talking to the mic. And he's like, come on, man. And it was like, yeah, bitch. So it's not easy when you're the one in the
right?
spotlight.
Yep.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Finally, the plane was fueled and ready to embark upon the next leg of this dangerous journey. However, prior to takeoff, Cooper insisted on several conditions.
He's got a lot of asks.
First, he wanted the rear stairs and landing gear to remain extended after takeoff. The pilots warned Cooper that this would hinder the flight, but Cooper was insistent. He also ordered pilots to fly him to Mexico City, but due to the plane's smaller fuel tank, the pilots informed him that this would be impossible without another fueling stop. They all agreed that Reno, Nevada would be an acceptable place to stop for fuel. Finally, Cooper insisted that the plane remain below 10,000 feet and stay slow, slower than 100 knots, the slowest speed allowable without stalling the engine. He also insisted that the cabin remain unpressurized. All three of these are highly unusual for commercial aircraft. Most commercial flights fly about 30,000 feet, have pressurized cabins, as any altitude above about 10,000 results in a lack of oxygen, and fly at speeds anywhere from 350 to 500 knots.
Yeah, so he was asking for...
Well, he knows he's about to jump out this bitch.
Sounds like it.
He's trying to do it the safest way possible.
As low as possible, slow as possible, and no need for an oxygen mask or,
Yeah.
So he obviously knew he was going to jump.
Oh, yes.
He also asked for the parachute.
Yeah, he knew he was going
to
jump.
I don't know why they ever believed that they were going to go to Mexico. What did they think the parachutes were for?
Maybe they didn't think they were going to Mexico. They were just... kind of playing along with this little game. Ultimately, the crew refused to take off with the staircase lowered, arguing that it was incredibly dangerous. Cooper was insistent, but because he needed the pilots to fly him to his escape, he relented, and the staircase was raised before takeoff. This now low-flying, slow-moving flight made its way toward Mexico by way of Reno. Cooper had let some crew members off, but flight attendant Tina Mucklow remained on board. After takeoff, Cooper told Tina to join the pilots in the cockpit, close the door, and stay in there. Prior to entering the cockpit, Tina saw Cooper tie something to his waist.
It's a fanny pack.
It's a fanny pack with his sunglasses in it. He wanted to make sure that...
I don't want him to fly off.
Yeah. I mean, you can't... Maybe that's where they were wraparound.
That's right.
So he could wear them in his descent.
He's like, I need 4 parachutes, $200,000, and one of those sunglass that go around the back of your
head.
The
foam things that connect around the back, you use when you're jet skiing.
Correct.
Then somewhere between Nevada and Washington, in an area widely accepted to be over aerial Washington, the pilots received an alert in the cockpit. Lights flashed and indicated that a door in the plane had been opened and the back staircase had been lowered. Cooper then jumped from the plane and into the freezing dark sky.
That's horrifying.
Him?
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine, place yourselves for a moment.
In the back of a plane.
In the back. You've just pried open this door, which since then, by the way, after this happened, they redesigned all of the 727s to where these doors could not be pried open in mid-flight. You lower these stairs. Winds at 200 miles per hour. Freezing. It's also raining. And you're like...
pitch dark.
Well, shit. I've come this far. I mean, you're in a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, that's
you're
true.
Like, I either give myself up spend the rest of my life in jail.
Because you know in Reno, it's not a fuel truck that's waiting for you. It's the FBI is waiting for you.
Absolutely,
in Reno.
Yeah. Or you say, fuck it, and just dive on out.
You know what? I got chills thinking about that. Just saying fuck it and jumping.
Yeah.
Jeez. Into the dark.
I think
your sunglasses on.
That's where his planning had... he had planned up to that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like most people, when they plan something really big like this,
mm-hmm.
plan to a certain, on a much like more heinous and tragic scale, like mass shooters.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a point to where they plan up to, and then it's like, well, I'm either going to kill myself or go to jail. Guess I'll kill myself.
Yeah. Well, or maybe in the planning stage is something like an end so heinous, they don't even plan for that. And it's like, well, we'll just get as far as we get and
yeah,
see.
Yeah.
He may have thought he wasn't even going to get the money. You know,
yeah.
He may have thought this is such a large sum of money. There's no way they're going to pay.
There's no way that the FBI isn't going to come on board when I get these parachutes.
And then they're taking off for Reno. And he's like, shit, man, they didn't even try to shoot me.
He's like, fuck,
I think I'm going to get away with
now,
this.
Now I got to jump out of this plane.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of hoping he didn't make it that far, so he wasn't confronted with having to do that.
He gets busted. And then he could tell people, you know what? I was going to jump out of the plane, but I couldn't.
Sure,
the
DB.
FBI.
Sure, you
the
were.
FBI,
first of all, it's Dan.
First of all, it's Dickbag. Please call me by my Christian name, Dickbag Cooper.
It's Mr. Dickbag Cooper to you. Well, none of the crew on board saw him jump. And in fact, the 727 was not alone that night. Unbeknownst to Cooper, the FBI had scrambled military planes to follow the plane after takeoff. The nearby McChord Air Force Base that Cooper had pointed out earlier was home to some fighter planes, and two of the base's F-106 jets followed the plane after takeoff.
So in my flying lessons, it's fairly easy to get jet scrambled on you. It turns out Dallas is...
if you fly over an area you're not supposed to?
Yes, Dallas has Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie airspace. And the area over DFW airport, you can't fly there in Love Field. And President George W. Bush's house, you
makes
can't
sense.
Fly over it.
Yeah.
And if you start going towards it, you'll basically get air traffic control radioing you and saying, what the hell are you doing? And if you don't respond, they'll just scramble jets and shoot you down.
I wish that... I was in a no-fly zone. How do I get my house on that list?
We hear
gotta be a president.
Southwest jets flying over.
Dude, there's mainly helicopters.
I know. I always wonder. I mean, I'm guessing maybe it's like medical helicopters.
Oh, these are people looking for criminals. We're in East Dallas, Heather.
That's true. I guess medical helicopters don't lie. They don't fly low and slow with the spotlight.
With the spotlight, yeah. And they're like, we just want everyone to know we have a very important patient on board.
No, they're
get
usually,
out of our way.
They're usually going somewhere pretty quickly. These are sort of hovering.
Yeah, they're just searching in someone's backyard.
Oh, God.
Well, three additional planes scrambled by the FBI also trailed the 727 for a bit. However, none of the other pilots saw Cooper jump from the plane.
Do you think they would have seen him?
I wonder what it would look like to see the stairs lower?
Well, they said that the at least so one of the three other scrambled planes ran out of fuel. So
they had to turn back.
They turned back. And then the F-106 jets, they didn't want Cooper to see them. So one flew so many hundred feet above and one flew so many hundred feet below. So the above guy is.
So what were they going to help with? Just to kind of I think just they were be just there to make them feel a little safer?
Yeah, and make sure they were going the right place. And I guess really the reason why jets normally are scrambled. So say it's usually anytime there's an unresponsive pilot. So if if they notice that a plane is flying off, so you don't have to file a flight plan when you're flying. You just can do like visual rules. So you said, I can see where I'm going. I don't have to tell anybody where I'm going. But if it's instrument conditions, like it's too, you can't see where you're going. You have to tell them, hey, this is where I'm going.
Yeah.
I plan to go this way. But so if you start deviating from that and they radio you and you ignore them, they'll scramble jets not to shoot you down, but to kind of look and see.
Well, they probably assume somebody's taken over.
Or if it's a small plane, did this guy have a heart attack?
Yeah.
Did he have a stroke? Did he pass out? Did he have a seizure?
Yeah.
And in that case, they'll follow them and say, hey, if we see that he starts to go down, because a plane, when you get to a certain altitude and you're flying straight and level, if you've got the controls going straight and level, the plane will go until it runs out of fuel.
Right.
And then once it runs out of fuel, it'll just kind of gently, planes don't just shoot out of the sky. They just kind of glides on down. But the problem
is
where.
It could glide into somebody's house.
Ding, ding, ding. So what they do is look at it and say, okay, well, if we shoot it down now, the trajectory is it'll hit this field.
Yeah.
Or it'll hit this water or something like that. Or if we let it go, it's going to hit this elementary school.
Yeah.
Well, we better shoot it down. So that's usually why they're trailing them. So in this case, if they lost radio contact with the pilots or something like, and
they could just shoot it down.
They thought, oh gosh, he went in there and choked the pilots to death or whatever. Then that was.
Well, if they're that far away, then maybe they wouldn't see that. I mean, it's dark and raining. Well, they say they didn't, but when we get to my theories.
Maybe he landed on the fighter jet.
Ooh, like
Iron Man style.
The thing on the wing?
Yes. There's something.
That
Iron Man.
Twilight Zone episode?
Yes.
Where he's on the wing of the
William
plane?
Shatner.
The monster? Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Well, after safely landing, the crew discovered Cooper, the parachutes, his attaché, and the $200,000 in cash were gone.
And his sunglasses.
And the sunglasses. The aircraft was immediately dusted for fingerprints, but none that could be attributed to the mysterious passenger were found. The only thing that remained of D.B. Cooper was one item. Laid on a seat in the back of the plane, the man's clip-on necktie from JCPenney.
He didn't want it whipping him in the face when he jumped out.
I wonder what that was about. Is it just kind of a F.U., like a signature calling card?
Who's here? D.B. Cooper.
Because why not just rip it off?
In the air.
Yeah. And throw it.
Also,
or
I think it was
put it in your attaché case. Or
there was bomb stuff in there, Christine. It wouldn't fit.
Or the bag they've given you all this cash in.
That's true.
I feel like leaving anything that was on your person behind.
He didn't know.
Is going to be a problem for you at some point.
You're asking to get caught.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a signature kind of thing. And back then they didn't think, oh, they're going to scrub this for DNA or for particulates or epithelial.
True.
These are all words I learned from CSI.
I love the word epithelial.
It's a good one.
In the days following the skyjacking, the FBI launched what Encyclopedia Britannica calls
one of the longest and most exhaustive investigations in the FBI's history.
Did you have encyclopedias growing up?
I did. Funk and Wagnall.
We did not have them.
My mom still has them at her house.
Really?
It is so fun.
A through Z?
Oh, yeah. It's so fun to go over there and open it up and be like, the internet.
Yeah.
And just see what it, because when I was a kid, because we always had computers, but before we had the internet, I would look the encyclopedias for my homework.
We didn't have them. Our neighbors across the street did.
Do you have to borrow them?
Yeah. So I would go over there and borrow them for reports and stuff.
That's so cute. What nice neighbors. You had such a nice neighborhood growing up
with
your scavenger hunts and your shared encyclopedias.
I was very, very lucky to live in the neighborhood we did.
That's so nice.
Well, and all my friends that I went to school with lived around too. So
even better.
We had a good neighborhood. Well, the FBI called the investigation NORJAC, short for Northwest Hijacking. Immediately after landing, the FBI scoured the plane for evidence, began interviewing witnesses, and assembled a list of possible suspects. Nearly 1,000 military troops searched the area where Cooper was thought to have jumped. Tests were even conducted with the same Boeing 727 in an attempt to recreate the jump to determine exactly when and where Cooper had made his escape. The aircraft was flown out over the ocean to the suspected jump zone. The plane's stairs were lowered, and weights simulating the same weight as Cooper were dropped from the cabin. That's smart.
That's pretty, but you can't, I mean, if you, that would in, then indicate that he didn't open the chute. Right?
The parachute?
Yeah, because it, all they did was dump a thing that weighed the same as him out of the cabin.
I think they were trying to see, like, planes going along. This is how much it weighs. Oh, now it weighs something different. So this is where he jumped so they would know where to look?
I guess, yeah. I was just thinking if it, so if you chuck a thing out of a plane and it doesn't have a chute on it, it's just going to fall straight down really fast versus with the parachute. He also, the thing, other thing about this test is winds would have been different at the time.
Yeah, it's not the most scientific, yeah. But it's also like,
it's also fun to throw a thing out of a plane.
It's also 1971.
They're like, we're going to do an experiment. I'm going to huck that thing
out
of a plane.
They needed Mythbusters.
They did. Yeah,
if only. Despite the government's efforts and resources, no trace of D.B. Cooper could be found. It appeared he had vanished into thin air when he jumped in the pitch black night 10,000 feet above the ground.
Gone like a ghost wearing sunglasses.
Over the course of the 5 years following the hijacking, the FBI considered over 800 suspects and eliminated all but 24 as the possible perpetrators. One seemingly strong candidate was Richard Floyd McCoy. Mere 5 months after the Norjak incident, McCoy had been arrested for a similar skyjacking and escape via parachute.
Did you read about Richard McCoy and how his wife drove him and thought, he's never going to do this? She drove him to the airport with him telling her, you know, that D.B. Cooper guy was an idiot. He should ask for $500,000 and now I'm going to go do my own skyjacking. And she said, oh, Richard, you're so silly.
He's
and
like, she's probably challenged him.
I wish you would get $500,000.
Yeah, this was like a game of chicken. All right, fine. And the whole time he's like, you think I won't? I'm going. I'm leaving. I'm doing it.
Sure.
I'm going right now.
Sure, let
me
drive you.
Okay, do it. I'm doing it. I'm getting out of the car. I am doing it.
Go buy your ticket, Richard.
All right, I'm doing it. I'm getting on the plane.
He
I'm going to do it.
He definitely got caught. But I mean,
but he also did it very almost to the T.
Exactly.
As Cooper, he passed a note. He had on sunglasses. He's like, I'm going to do it the way it should have been.
He's at the sunglass hut the week before. Are you going to a beach? You got a beach vacation?
It's like, which ones did Dick Bag have? I need the Dick Bag sunglasses.
I'm sorry. So you're not going to the beach?
Well, I don't know. It depends on where I land. Sharon, please stop questioning me.
Okay, fine. The Ray-Bans. We'll get you the wraparounds.
Well, however, the FBI was ultimately forced to release McCoy, as he did not match the consistent descriptions given by both flight attendants, who arguably spent the most time with Cooper and were able to describe him best.
They're like, he was that cool emoji.
So he did get arrested for the one he did, but yes. He was not, they eliminated him as a potential Cooper suspect.
I think he was a copycat. He was just a simple copycat.
Cooper copycat. Well, after watching the Unsolved Mysteries episode, where Robert Stack covered the infamous skyjacking, Lyle Christensen became convinced his brother Kenneth was D.B. Cooper.
It's the strength of Stack. He can convince
you. Dude, I watched
you.
This episode.
This is so good.
Fucking great.
I love
it. I was
him.
Like, man, this show is so good.
The music was so good.
God, it still gave me chills.
So good.
It was very good.
We used to watch that. That was pretty much that and Wonder Years were.
Yes, and Rescue 911.
Oh, okay.
Unsolved Mysteries and Rescue 911 were in the same time block. That was my jam.
That was what you watched.
That's what I grew up. I've always been into this stuff.
Yeah. And that's when we were little, me and my sister would watch on Lifetime, like the reruns.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, my dad said, always said that was like one of the only times we weren't fighting because we're 6 years apart. So we, you know.
You got to pay attention to the stack.
He said
he'd be fighting during Unsolved Mysteries.
You walk by and it's like, the body was found in the lake. And we're
y'all
like,
are like, shh. The body was found where?
We're going to solve this. We're going to solve this. That's how, you know, we got
Robert Stack walks off this plane in this reenactment in a.
Does he have a raincoat?
Floor length velvet trench coat
on. Yes.
He looks so fly.
I just love how it's he great. Talks. I love him in basketball too when they do a.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh my God. I love it so much. It's so bad. It's awful, but it's so good. And they do a parody in it and he's. Again, plays it so straight. He plays it exactly as if it was a real episode.
God, that voice.
Yeah. She says, if you're looking for this man, you can see where there's the most, you can go check where there's the most heinous and blatant and vile exploitation of children on the planet. And then it cuts to Robert Stack and he's like, theory number two, he went to Disney World. It's the Zucker Brothers, the people that made Airplane, made Basketball.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I thought it was the South Park guys.
They're in it.
But oh, they didn't write it?
No, they said that they kind of helped write it. But at the time, they were writing and working on South Park, and then they were shooting that.
I thought they wrote it.
Yeah.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, according to Gizmodo.com, Kenneth possessed several characteristics that make him a prime Cooper candidate. He was a paratrooper in the military, meaning he would have been a skilled jumper. He worked as a mechanic for Northwest Airlines at the time of the hijacking, confirming some people's suspicions that this was an inside job. He also bought a new house, albeit a modest one, immediately after the hijacking, and had a known affinity for bourbon.
These are all signs pointing. I mean, his brother wouldn't be totally off base.
Man, imagine you're watching something and you're like, I'm related to this person. I've never watched anything and thought, oh, I know the person that did this.
I think I could tell you who this was.
It's got to be such a odd revelation.
The rush.
Because part of you's like, that's cool as fuck. My brother's D.B. Cooper.
Also, where the hell's some of that money, bro?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I asked. The other night we went to dinner and he made me pay.
Yeah.
Where's his Cooper cash?
He said, come on, little bro, and made me pick up the check. After he ordered appetizers and dessert.
And the most expensive bourbon they had to offer. Author Jeffrey Gray, who wrote Skyjack, The Hunt for D.B. Cooper, also believes Christensen is the most likely suspect. Gray claims that when he showed a picture of Christensen to a flight attendant that had interacted with Cooper on the ground, she said it was the most accurate picture she had seen of all the suspects.
Oh.
Lyle also claimed that his brother tried to clear his conscience upon his deathbed, but was unable to fully confess, instead proclaiming,
there's something you should know, but I can't tell you.
Okay.
Rude.
First of all, if you're going to do a deathbed confession, it's not called a deathbed
hint.
Oh, oops, psych.
Deathbed hint.
It's a deathbed confession. You're going to die. It doesn't matter. You're going to leave your loved one with this hanging over their head of, wait, what were they going to tell me?
The ultimate troll. That's why I plan on my deathbed to say, my fortune is buried in the... and then die. Yeah.
Wow. Well, despite some strong arguments that Christensen was their man, the FBI dismissed him as a suspect on the grounds that most eyewitnesses said that he did not, in fact, look like Cooper. In addition, the FBI has always been adamant that Cooper was not a skilled jumper, and because Christensen had been a military paratrooper, they felt this immediately ruled him out.
I mean, eyewitness accounts suck.
Yeah. Yep. And even Florence Schaffner, in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they interview her. I believe she has since passed, but back then she was still very much alive. She says that the sketch artist rendering, the famous one that if you Google D.B. Cooper, it's the first thing that pops up with his sunglasses on.
He looks like Dale Gribble in the sketch.
Yes. She said that's not what he looked like.
Wow.
So they had another sketch artist sit with her and she retold him and said, like, no, make his face a little bigger here, the nose wider. And they did a new sketch. So the original one was not even what he really looked like. And then, like you said, eyewitness accounts suck.
Suck.
So
you can't trust. You can't
I don't think ruling someone out on that and that alone, and because you think, oh, well, he wasn't a skilled jumper and this guy was. To me, that is not two good reasons to rule somebody out.
Mm-mm.
Also, just like the government would want you to think that they're not a skilled jumper if it was one of them.
What? We'll get to that theory.
Dwayne Weber had been a criminal and con artist for most of his life. On his deathbed in 1995, he confessed to his wife, Jo, to one of the biggest cons in history. As he lay there, taking his last breaths, Jo claims he beckoned her closer, pulled her ear to his mouth, and whispered,
"I have a secret to tell you. I'm Dan Cooper."
Again. This woman is now left with this.
What? Honey, what?
What? What?
Beep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and
gone.
It's like, oh, you're a bomb is dropped. No pun intended. You got all these questions.
And where's the fucking money?
And then you're like, golly, I'm left to just deal with this by myself.
Do I call the cops? Do I? But where's the money,
know,
Dan?
I want to know it. I guess deathbed confessions are all about clearing your own conscience before you pass on to whatever is on the other side. But maybe think about what you're leaving that person with, the burden you're leaving this person with.
You are creating something for them that they're going to now have to deal with.
Yes.
That you get to just walk away
from. Yeah,
you
pieced out from.
Feels nice.
Yeah. Well, according to BuzzFeed Unsolved, it wasn't long after this deathbed confession that Jo started to piece together things that up until then hadn't made sense. Jo said her husband would often talk in his sleep, mumbling worried thoughts about leaving fingerprints behind on a plane. She also claims he suffered from chronic knee problems and told her it was from an injury he endured while jumping out of a plane.
Damn. It sounds like he was trying to give little hints here and there.
The knee problem thing, that could have just, he's cognizant when he's doing that.
Yeah.
Sleep talking, unless he's fake sleep talking,
true,
which that is committing to the bit here. But those are things that your subconscious is doing all the work there.
Do you ever sleep talk?
I was just talking about sleepwalking and sleep talking with Laura Goff the other night, who played in Local Honey.
Laura Goff is so goddamn good.
Jesus, she's so funny. She sleepwalks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it has to, like, if she's like super tired or something like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah. She doesn't do anything like super insane. Like you hear people like
eating dog biscuits or driving.
Or getting in your car or something like that. But she also has sleep talked. And I think she said her husband does too. Anytime I've done it, I wake myself up in the middle of it.
Oh, okay.
It's like the sound of my voice like wakes me up. But I have done it a few times.
Yeah.
I had a friend in high school whose brother would sleep talk in Spanish.
Oh, that's wild. Did he speak Spanish?
He took Spanish, but it's not like he spoke it fluently in his everyday life.
Oh, that's strange. It's deep within you. You can speak Spanish, buddy. It turns out.
Yeah.
I've screamed myself awake, but
I've done that several times.
Last night I was falling asleep watching the Cowboy game and Paris was trying to talk to me. And apparently I was not pretending. I mean, I was trying to stay awake, but I'm so tired. He was like, "Why would you say Bernie Sanders?" And I was like, "I don't know." And he had mentioned Buffalo. Maybe the Bills were playing or something. Maybe it was Buffalo Wild Wings commercial. Something. He said something about Buffalo. And I was like, "That's where Bernie Sanders is from." And he's like, "No, he's not." And that woke me up. And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You just said Bernie Sanders." I said, "I was dreaming about Bernie Sanders because Larry David played him on Saturday Night Live this week."
Oh, yeah.
It made me think of him. But yeah, I have this thing where if I'm dozing off, I'll keep talking.
It's like a lucid dream.
But I'm not. It's like nonsense. It's like half dream, half awake.
Yeah.
But I'll still respond. You can talk to me and I'll respond. But it'll be like nonsense.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I think I've done that before too.
Yeah. My friends would all do it to me at sleepovers because they knew I would stay. Like they could mess with me.
Did they ever freeze your underwear? Put your hand in a pot of warm water?
I think I might have told on the show where my friend sleepwalked when she was a kid and we didn't know. And she invited us to a sleepover at her house and did not tell us that she sleepwalked. And we did the shaving cream thing.
Uh-huh.
And she did it to herself, stood up, did a lap around the house, walked into her parents' bedroom and climbed in bed with them. So got shaving cream all over her parents. And her mom woke up and was the nicest about it and said, "I'm so sorry. I should have told you she sleepwalked." Because we thought she was mad at us because she was walking around the house not talking to us. And we're like, "Wake up." Or not wake up. We're like, "Hey, oh my God, we're so sorry. We're so sorry." And she just was like, but her eyes were open, but
yeah,
she was still
it's
asleep.
It's weird to see it happen.
Yeah. And then she walked downstairs and back upstairs, which was amazing. She did the stairs.
Yeah.
And then she climbed in bed with her parents and her mom comes out covered in shaving cream and said, "I'm not mad because I should have told you."
Also, this is kind of funny.
She was like, "Good bit. Good joke.
Well, bizarrely, Duane's handwriting was reportedly found in the margins of a library book about D.B. Cooper. His wife also claims that he had an old Northwest Airlines ticket for no apparent reason, and even took her to Tina Bar, the beach where some of the ransom money was eventually found. That's all weird stuff.
It's all coming together.
Regarding Weber, former FBI lead agent on the Cooper case, Ralph Himmelsbach, was quoted as saying,
"He does fit the physical description. He does have the criminal background that I've always felt was associated with the case."
Despite this admission and finding Joe Weber's story credible, Himmelsbach does not believe Weber was D.B. Cooper. Years later, DNA from the left-behind clip-on tie would also rule out Weber as a suspect.
He should have
taken it with him.
Always keep the evidence.
Yeah. According to BuzzFeed Unsolved, CitizenSleuths.com also believes the tie is the key to unlocking this mystery. Using an electron microscope to examine the tie Cooper left behind before jumping into the night, the sleuths discovered cerium, strontium sulfide, and titanium.
That's weird stuff to have on your tie. I don't think it came from the JCPenney that way.
I don't think so either.
And if it did, you should complain.
These are what are referred to as rare earth elements, and in 1971, were especially rare. However, one place they would have been found at the time was the Boeing plant, where an advanced supersonic transport plane was being developed.
So somebody was wearing their tie at work.
Maybe. Tom Ray, head investigator at Citizen Sleuths, believes D.B. Cooper was a Boeing employee, and that someone that also worked there during this time could possibly have vital information that could help solve this case.
Well, get on it. They're all elderly now.
Yeah, that ship may have sailed.
I think so.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe an intern.
Somebody's kid in their teens.
Yeah. A drug runner named Ron Carlson recalled to a friend the encounter he and his former partner in crime had back in February of 1980 with a man who claimed to be Cooper. While attending a large party in Portland, the two men encountered John Richard Dick Briggs, who claimed that he was the famous hijacker.
Dick Briggs is going to brag.
You know, I think that's anybody named Dick Briggs. He's going to bring his dick out.
He's like, Dick Briggs. Brig dick.
Lots of puns here. The men brushed him off as a braggart, but then Dick pointed out a couple on the beach, not far from the party, standing on the banks of the Columbia River. According to an interview with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Ron recalls that Dick told him and his partner that the, quote, hippie-looking couple would soon stumble on some of the famous D.B. Cooper money. Just 5 days later, Carson saw a news broadcast that the hippie couple and their son had found some of the alleged Cooper money.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
So he pointed out and said, that spot where they're standing, there will be money. And then they found it.
That hippie couple was supposedly the Ingram family. On February 10th, 1980, 8-year-old Brian Ingram, an Arkansas native, and his family were camping on Tina Bar near the banks of the Columbia River in Washington State, just 9 miles downstream from Vancouver, Washington. In an interview with the Arkansas Times, Brian said his family was preparing to make a campfire, and Brian's dad had begun stacking wood. Brian was combing through some beach sand to make a flat place to build when he stumbled across what felt like old newspaper.
As a kid, it's like your fantasy,
right? Oh, yeah.
You're digging in the sand and
find a legitimate buried treasure.
Treasure.
The boy began digging and eventually uncovered several rubber-banded bundles of $20 bills, totaling $5,800. Given the sum, the Ingrams contacted local police. When the police checked the serial numbers against the photocopied 20s given to Cooper nearly a decade earlier, they discovered this literal buried treasure was, without a doubt, from the Cooper ransom money.
So that's why you give them serialized numbers.
Yep. And this is the first clue or discovery that had been made since the tie? Really, yeah. It's really at all. There really was no discovery at all before
this.
Took
9 years because they searched the woods. There was no shredded parachute, no shoes left behind.
No fingerprints on the, which I don't understand how there weren't fingerprints on the plane because there were no reports that he was wearing gloves or anything.
I mean, unless he was just really cognizant
and wiped stuff down
or just didn't touch anything.
Yeah. Well, he had those drinks though.
Ooh, that's true. He threw them out the back of the plane.
He took them with him. Left the tie, threw out the glasses.
Leave the tie, take the cups.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for little Brian, he was unable to keep the found cash. The FBI took the money from him for nearly 6 years while the parties battled it out in court. Eventually, a judge determined that Brian could keep nearly 3,000 of the 5,800 he had found, while the FBI retained 14 examples for evidence and the airline's insurance company kept the rest.
They're trying to recover whatever they can. They're like, we'll take
2,000. I'm surprised they gave him any of it, to be honest.
True.
I mean, that's kind of nice that they did that.
Yeah, I guess it's finders keepers partially.
In 2006, after keeping the bills in a safe deposit box for most of his life, the now 34-year-old Brian decided to sell them as a piece of history. After having the bills certified as authentic, Brian sold them at auction in 2008 for about $37,000.
Pretty good return on investment.
Well, that's kind of a nice little profit he made for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Although Brian found a large stash, about 9,700 other $20 bills remain missing. To this day, none of the bills have ever shown up in circulation.
Oh.
That's very interesting to me.
Especially on the theory where they say, oh, I think my brother did it and he bought a house. How would you buy a house if you didn't spend the money?
Or, I mean, if he survived,
mm-hmm.
the money, if he used it, would have had to have turned up, right? Is there any situation in which it wouldn't have?
I wouldn't think so, because
paying someone under the table for something, perhaps.
But then they would go and spend it somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
So even if you know, you do a drug deal or whatever and give somebody $20, eventually that's going to go to a legitimate establishment at some point. You know, it's going to go to a 7-Eleven, and then 7-Eleven deposits it in their bank account, and then it gets scanned, and then they know where that dollar's been.
So that's what trips me up, is that why, if he survived, how has the money never been spent?
Unless,
why go to all that trouble if you're never going to spend the money?
Because what, $5,800 was buried on the Tina bar. Who's to say he didn't split it up and bury it in multiple different places, thinking, I'll come back later, and then something happened to him in the meantime?
That's true.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, CitizensLoose.com, an online group made up of scientists and amateur detectives, once again have provided several theories as to how this money wound up buried in the sand of Tina Bar. The beach is roughly 20 miles from Ariel, Washington, the town closest to the area where it is assumed Cooper made his daring jump. Some subscribe to the Washougal washdown theory and believe that the money was carried by several smaller rivers to the Columbia River before being washed on the shore of Tina Bar. Others believe that the FBI was incorrect in their assessment of the jump zone and that Cooper himself landed on Tina Bar that night and buried the money. Still others believe someone else buried the money there on Cooper's behalf in an attempt to throw off the FBI.
Interesting.
Lots of theories. Arguably the strongest argument for how the cash found its way to the beach comes from Portland State University geologist Dr. Leonard Palmer. In 1974, 3 years after the hijacking occurred, the Columbia River was dredged, depositing sand from the bottom of the river all along the Tina Bar. In his findings, Dr. Palmer determined the Cooper money had been found in a layer of sand deposited by the dredging. This meant that the money had most likely been somewhere upstream for many years prior to being discovered on Tina Bar.
That's so fascinating that you would study sand to the point that you know where the sand came from.
And would you ever think you would help solve a mystery,
like a crime,
with your sand knowledge?
It's like, you know what? This is why I got into geology, is to solve crimes.
New one day. This
new
is
one
pay
day.
Off.
Exactly.
I think that's probably the most likely theory, is it fell out when he jumped out, or he hit the water and it fell out or whatever, and it just eventually washed up onto this bar.
Through rain or wind or whatever. Yeah.
And the money was very deteriorated and had holes in it. And it was, waterlogged, obviously.
And we'll put the link up. But there's a picture of Brian as an adult, the little boy that found the money when he's a grown up, and the money spread out in front of him. And you can see that it's some whole bills, some tiny little fragments, some looks like confetti. So it's in varying stages of rotting. And
what was interesting, though, is the rubber bands were intact.
Weird.
So that's also let a lot of theories loose. But this brings the investigation back to Dick Briggs. After all, it was he who bragged Ron Carlson and his partner that Brian's family would find the money. While Briggs died in a car crash in 1980, his legendary admission lived on. 30 years later, while drinking with friends, Carlson would recount the crazy story from that night on the beach. As luck would have it, one of Carlson's friends knew filmmaker Thomas Colbert and connected the two for an interview. Colbert was convinced by Ron's story that the bragging Briggs must have had something to do with the Cooper mystery. Soon his research and digging led him to Robert Rackstraw, an old acquaintance of Briggs. Originally born in Ohio, Robert Rackstraw was an Army veteran, dismissed in 1971 for falsifying his college records just months before the hijacking occurred. Rackstraw also lied about his rank and medals and was known for having 22 different aliases.
That's so many aliases.
That's too many. That's too many.
That's aliases. More aliases than Sidney Bristow on the TV show Alias.
That's a lot of aliases.
That's so many.
How would you keep up with that?
You'd have to have a Rolodex back in the
day.
You
gotta have a secretary. 22 secretaries, most likely. During his time in the Army, he gained valuable expertise as a paratrooper and was trained in explosives. He was also chastised for making unauthorized parachute jumps and participating in unauthorized missions for the CIA and the Green Berets.
So he's kind of living a James Bond lifestyle here.
He's a bit of a loose cannon. Rackstraw was no stranger to bold moves, either. In 1978, he apparently died in a plane crash in Monterey Bay, California. But just a few months later, investigators found him alive, as he was arrested for stealing an aircraft, passing bad checks, and had apparently faked his own death.
That's bold.
So you're doing a lot. You're stealing an aircraft and you're passing bad checks. Pick a lane. Those are two such vastly different things to be arrested for.
One is, so like quiet and insidious, and the other one's pretty bold.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Airplane Repo, the TV show?
No.
It's these people that they repossess airplanes, because that's a thing, because I guess sometimes you try to buy an airplane and you cannot afford it.
I think, yeah.
And that's when airplane repo comes in, and they'll go into an airstrip and say, that's the plane, and they look around, see if the guy's around, and they jump in the airplane.
So it's just like a car, but a plane.
Mm-hmm. And they jump in it and steal it. I mean, I guess they're stealing it for the rightful owner.
They're taking it back,
taking back the skies, airplane repo.
Well, this stunt earned him a 2-year prison sentence. Upon release, Rackstraw then called local news stations and willfully admitted to being Cooper. He later claimed this was simply a publicity stunt and denied any involvement in the Norjack incident.
I myself have never been paroled for a crime, but I feel like an important step when you get out, you know, you want to see your family. Go, maybe you'll get a hamburger. Don't call the news stations and confess to a federal crime.
To something that you could just go right back to jail for.
Don't do that.
No, that's not what I would do.
It's a bad move. If you want, you tell your kids you're really Santa. If you want, or tell, there's a lot of things you could confess to, but not a federal crime on the news.
Yeah. Which would you rather know, that your dad was really Santa or that your dad was D.B. Cooper?
I would be so mad if he was D.B. Cooper, because where's the money?
See, I'd be more hurt that he was Santa.
Because you didn't know.
Well, I want to believe in magic.
I thought you meant like in the Tim Allen, the Santa Claus-esque, like where he genuinely actually is Santa.
Oh, I was thinking the ruse is up.
Oh,
there's no Santa. It's been me this whole time.
How old were you when you found out there was no Santa?
I distinctly remember this conversation. I want to say I was in 3rd or 4th grade.
Okay.
But I remember going to my mother in our living room and saying, is Santa really real? And she said, do you really want to know? Which is already
the
an answer.
Answer.
And I said, no. And then a few hours later, I came back downstairs and I was like, yes.
And she
was like, it's your dad and I, but the spirit of Santa is real. I also have two younger brothers. She was like, and you need to keep this up.
Yes.
They still believe. But also for years, even after we all knew, she still did Santa presents and stuff and wanted the spirit of Santa is what we really want to embrace.
I like
here.
That. I believe my sister found out, you know, when she was like 10 or 11 and my mom said, you know, don't tell Heather. And then when I asked my mom, is Santa real? And my mom said, if you stop believing in Santa, he'll stop coming and you won't get presents anymore. And I said,
you got to keep believing.
33, almost. Santa's still real.
Yeah. Well, when comparing the FBI sketch created at the time of the hijacking to Rackstraw's 1970 Army ID photo, experts have found 9 points of match between the two faces. However, when presented with the photo of Rackstraw, the flight attendants denied he was the man on the plane. Which are we going to believe? Science or an eyewitness account? In February of 1979, the FBI officially said Rackstraw was no longer a suspect in the D.B. Cooper case. However, that didn't stop Colbert from pursuing the lead. On July 12, 2016, the FBI released a statement that read,
following one of the longest and most exhaustive investigations in our history, on July 8, 2016, the FBI redirected resources allocated to the D.B. Cooper case in order to focus on other investigative priorities. Although the FBI appreciated the immense number of tips provided by members of the public, none to date have resulted in the definitive identification of the hijacker.
In an interview with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, FBI agent Frank Montoya Jr. indicated that while the FBI wouldn't be pursuing any further tips, they would consider something if there was evidence involved.
If something did come up that was worthy of additional pursuit, we would consider it. The bottom line would be the money or the parachute.
Well, I think those, that or a body, are the only things you can find at this point.
Well, and they found shredded parachutes throughout the years, and the fellow, Mr. Crossy, who packed the parachute.
Yeah, he was a salty old man.
He was hilarious. He said, people will come up to my house and ask me, and every time I'd look at it, I'd go, no. And then he said on April Fool's Day one time, they happened to ask him if that was a parachute, and he said, oh, yeah, wow, you've really found it. That's amazing. Like, what a, yeah. Such a troll.
He's tired of people asking him questions. In September of 2016, filmmaker Thomas Colbert filed a federal lawsuit against the FBI, alleging that the Bureau closed the case in an effort to hide the fact that it failed to fully investigate Robert Rackstraw and wanted to save itself from embarrassment. In addition, he made a Freedom of Information Act request regarding some evidence the FBI had been withholding. After the hijacking, the FBI received 6 taunting letters from a man claiming to be D.B. Cooper. The first 4 had been released to the public. However, the 5th and 6th had been kept under government lockdown. Colbert argued that the public had a right to see these last 2 letters. The judge agreed, and the letters were released to the public. Upon obtaining these new pieces of potentially crucial evidence, Colbert immediately took them to Sergeant Rick Sherwood, a member of the 40-person private investigation team Colbert had assembled to prove, once and for all, Rickstraw was, in fact, D.B. Cooper.
He is just tenacious.
He's passionate.
He can't. I mean, he's decided that it's Rackstraw. Do you think that that becomes a problem and clouds your investigative judgment if you're so fixated on a certain target? Like, maybe you'll see things differently?
You see everything through that lens.
Mm-hmm.
If you've already got it made up in your mind and you're trying to, you already have the answer and you're trying to fit all the puzzle pieces to get you to that answer, yeah, I think that could be a problem. You should be looking at all the evidence and having that lead you to the answer instead of vice versa.
That's what Sherlock Holmes always said.
Well, we have many things in common, myself and Sherlock Holmes. Sherwood had served in the military with Rackstraw, both men being members of the Army Security Agency. Sherwood's specialty was code breaking, and during his 3 tours in the Vietnam War, he was awarded 2 Bronze Stars for his impressive work.
Man, code breaking is so interesting to me.
Yeah. The interviews with this guy and how he does it is very interesting.
And deciphering things like that, it's amazing.
Having served with Rackstraw, even deciphering some of his messages during the war, Sherwood is familiar with his fellow veterans' writing style. According to Rolling Stone, when Sherwood reviewed the Cooper letters, he immediately noticed the
odd letter and number combinations.
And that they looked exactly like something Rackstraw would have sent.
So he's doubly helpful because he personally knew Rackstraw and he's a code breaker.
And he personally had already decoded Rackstraw's messages.
Yes.
Using a code where each letter in the alphabet is assigned a numerical value, Sherwood believes he has uncovered several damning clues in the letters, including the following sentence.
And please tell the lackey cops D.B. Cooper is not my real name.
Which Sherwood decoded to,
I am First Lieutenant Robert Rackstraw. D.B. Cooper is not my real name.
We'll post in the show notes the CBS interview with him that shows how he did all of this. It's wild, the decoding that goes on. And several other things that were broken down too from the letters. But that's, if that is correct, and this guy seems to know what he's doing, he's been awarded medals from the military and stars, for his work. Yeah. That's pretty, like, just, there's not a lot you can argue with there.
The decoded message is an admission of who his identity.
In an interview with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, as reported by Rolling Stone, Colbert was quoted as saying,
Rackstraw is a narcissistic sociopath who never thought he would be caught. He was trying to prove that he was smarter than anyone else, but he couldn't fight 1,500 years of brain power on our team. We beat him. I didn't expect it, but it's the icing.
In 2016, Colbert penned his nonfiction novel, The Last Outlaw, which details the extensive 5-year investigation of his team and the evidence compiled against Rackstraw. That same year, the History Channel documentary, D.B. Cooper, Case Closed, which is based on Colbert's findings, also aired.
It's a dangerous game, legally speaking, to pick a person and say they are a world-class criminal and here's all the criminal things they did.
Well, it's why Ramsey sued the documentary that they all said, no, he did it. Burke did it.
That's right.
Burke and killed his sister.
That's why he sued CBS for $16 million.
Yeah. On Tuesday, July 9th, 2019, Robert Rackstraw passed away from a longstanding heart condition at his home in San Diego, California. He had threatened to sue the makers of the History Channel documentary and maintained that he was not, nor had he ever been, D.B. Cooper. FBI agent Curtis Ng denied that Rackstraw was the famous hijacker.
Although the History Channel documentary presentation was thorough and it was detailed, it didn't prove that this suspect was Dan Cooper. I can't go by a nice presentation. I have to go by evidence. And in this case, there isn't ample evidence.
Before his death, Rackstraw told the Washington Post,
"It's been asked for 45 years. I was never charged. I was made a victim and a suspect, and holy hell was raised throughout my life."
Okay. However, in the documentary, The Last Outlaw, which...
Or the D.B. Cooper Case Closed?
Yes, which was based on The Last Outlaw. A reporter confronts him walking, just like walking in a parking lot, and is like, the world would want to know if you're D.B. Cooper. And he's real jokey about it, and is like, yeah, and the FBI, and a lot of other people. Guess we'll never know. So he also, at times, would kind of play into the mystery
like
of
it.
Like
he enjoyed the attention, maybe.
Yeah, or... I think he may have been him.
Really?
That's my theory. Yeah.
All right.
The identity of the unassuming man, clad in a dark suit and clip-on tie, who purchased a $20 one-way ticket under the name Dan Cooper and proceeded to successfully hijack a plane with $200,000 in cash and disappear into the dark of night, remains a mystery. To this day, it is the only unsolved American skyjacking case in history.
I think that's why it's such a... It's just
people are obsessed with it.
Tickles in the back of everyone's mind. How?
It's that one case that they're like, how could this happen? How have we not solved this?
Exactly. With all the technology we have and all the, you know, pieces of evidence.
How did it? Yeah. How was it not solved that night?
Years ago.
Yeah. Some believe that Cooper never could have survived the jump from the aircraft, including Special Agent Larry Carr, who, like many, believe Cooper was not an experienced parachutist. The internet is filled with debates on this subject, with many points of interest being listed on citizensleuths.com. According to the sleuths, Cooper requested front and back parachutes and chose a non-steerable military chute. Unbeknownst to him, the reserve chute he took was a training chute, therefore sewn shut and completely useless. All of these seem like novice moves. However, a military chute would hold up better in the 200-mile-per-hour winds Cooper would have been met with upon exiting the plane. If he was, in fact, an experienced jumper, he would have known this type of chute would be best for the job. He also reportedly put on the chute without instruction, leading some to believe it wasn't his first time donning one.
Yeah, if you handed me a parachute, I have no idea.
Oh, no, I just throw it out the plane.
Yeah,
I don't be like, why do I just jump after this and hold on?
Do I sit on it
this
like a
cushion?
This is
like a life jacket, right? Life preserver. Still, the fighter jets and other aircraft tailing the hijacked plane never saw a parachute open, which may indicate that there was some type of malfunction in the chute. Cooper also jumped over a heavily wooded area during a rainstorm and was dressed in a simple suit, not appropriate attire for sub-zero air temperatures or the rugged terrain below. A jump like this would have been incredibly difficult for even the most experienced skydiver.
Yeah, he doesn't have on hiking boots. He had on alligator shoes.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking.
Unless, because he sent Tina, the flight attendant, into the cockpit and locked the door and nobody saw him again. Maybe he changed clothes.
Maybe. And then someone else also said, we don't know what he had on underneath it.
True.
He could have been wearing long johns or some of that, but he didn't have anything with him that would have been carrying clothes.
Like suitcase.
Yeah, he just had the one attaché. It was open and everyone saw what was inside. So no. I don't know what his plan was. Again, part of me thinks he didn't think he was going to make it that far.
Off the plane, yeah.
But even if you're planning on, like, there's a chance I could, you got to prepare.
Take it all the way. Wear a suit or, at least appropriate footwear.
Yeah. If he made it to the ground, he's going to have to hike in a bunch of wooded areas. I don't know. Seems like there was some details that fell between the cracks. Did D.B. Cooper perish that night, falling victim to the elements and his lack of parachuting skills? Was he one of the initial FBI suspects who was eventually cleared, getting away scot-free? Or is he still out there, sipping a bourbon and soda, a faint smile on his lips, placed there by the secret only he knows?
Whips on sunglasses.
Yeah!
You won't be mean again!
Oh, so what do we think?
Well, signs really point to this Rackstraw fellow.
I think it could be Rackstraw.
I don't think he died. I don't think the hijacker, regardless of his true identity, died upon the jump. I think he survived the jump.
Where do you think he landed?
I think he landed in a wooded area and then walked somewhere. And, you know, you're a reasonably well-kept white man with an attaché case and a suit. You go anywhere.
Yeah, but you gotta look kind of ragged after jumping out of a plane and landing in a forest. I imagine True. He doesn't look as well kept as he did when he got on that
plane.
Or
he had a friend help him.
That's one theory people have. However, I don't think he could have, because the pilot is the one that dictated the flight plan.
So he wouldn't know where they were going.
And Cooper just said, fly me to Mexico City, and then just randomly jumped out of the place. So he wouldn't have had a meetup point to tell anybody to meet him at.
True, and he wasn't in the cockpit, so he couldn't see the map. Oh, I'm over Southern Washington. He may have said, oh, we're over Nevada. I'm going to jump into the desert and jump too soon or something.
So I don't think he had someone helping him. My question is, why hasn't the money been spent?
Because why go through all this trouble to hijack a plane and get that much money for the time? I mean, it's still a lot of money for now, but get that much money in spendable bills like 20s, unless he thought, oh, I'm going to get these $20 bills. They're not going to be as trackable as $100 bills, not going to be as obvious. And then he escapes, goes to a hotel room, and the news says, the FBI has photocopied and has serial numbers of all the 20s. And he thinks, well, shit, I might as well plant it in the beach and let some kid find it.
I don't think he planted it there. I think it fell out when he jumped and it just washed up on the shore.
But yeah. I bet he thought, well, shit, I'm going to get caught.
Like, so he just never spent the money. It was all for naught.
I was going to say, or maybe he thought, okay, let me sit on the money for like 20 years and then I'll spend it. Or I'll sit on the money for 15 years. Well, 9 years later, they find this money on the beach. It comes out in the news. We track the serial numbers. Yeah. And then he thinks, well, shit, now I can't spend it. It's in a shed somewhere in Robert Rackstraw's shed.
Somebody's going to find this one day.
Someday.
Some like great-great-great-great-grandkid is going to find this.
It's going to be in an attic, a trunk, a cedar chest.
Under a floorboard in a house
or
something.
In the banana stand.
Yep. There's always money in the banana stand.
So they'll find it.
I think it could have been Rackstraw for sure. Mm-hmm. That I feel like there's a lot of good arguments for him. So.
Especially given, you know, Sergeant Sherwood's decoding of those letters.
Yeah, I think that's pretty strong evidence. And Unfortunately, if it was him, now we definitely will never know.
Yeah, you know what?
Unless he left some admission somewhere in a diary or something.
Well,
that,
like you said, when they said, oh, people want to know if you're D.B. Cooper, and he thought, and he said, oh, yeah, the FBI would too. He thought, I'm going to really outsmart him, and I'm not going to tell anybody.
The one thing, though, since they do have DNA from the tie, I didn't see if they had compared it to his and if it had been... if that cleared him as a suspect or not, but that
maybe not yet.
But a lot of the DNA that came back from it too, it all just kept coming back inconclusive.
It may not be enough,
which is kind of inconclusive in itself.
I mean, you're sweating on a clip-on tie.
Well, let us know what you guys think, or if you are DB Cooper,
please DM us.
And you are listening to this podcast, please DM us. We have a couple questions.
Anytime,
we'd love to have you on the show.
We'd appreciate it.
Well, we've got some live shows coming up, Heather.
The Cult is performing October 5th at 9 p.m. and October 18th at 10 p.m. And then, Christy, do you know what's happening on October 19th at 10 p.m. at Dallas Comedy House in Dallas?
Sinisterhood Live.
That's right. Sinisterhood Live. We're going to do a live podcast recording, and you can get tickets on our website at sinisterhood.com. There's a link, and we'll also post some stuff about it on our Instagram.
Yep, it's going to be a super fun one.
We are so excited. Mostly I'm excited. Another opportunity to get some cheese fries.
Yeah.
Any opportunity I will take.
Sinisterhood will always remain free, but if you wish to donate to our Patreon to help offset the cost of making and hosting the show, you can visit sinisterhood.com and click on Patreon in the top right corner. You'll get some sweet perks like Patreon-exclusive content, a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group, a special shout-out on the show, and a monthly bonus mini-sode. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pictures of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Keep those pictures coming. And if you want to get some cool Sinisterhood swag of your own, like t-shirts, mugs, totes, and even clothes for your kiddos, visit sinisterhood.com and click on shop in the top right corner.
The best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where is your stuff at?
I am on Twitter at Christy or GTFO and on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather, what about you?
I'm on Instagram at Heather VS The World and on Twitter at MCK VS The World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Allie Baxter,
Melanie Laws,
Jenny Lopez,
Madison Greener,
Bailey,
Max Gore,
Kate Smith,
Angela Hofstetter,
Ashley Cronkite,
Mallory Clay,
Kim,
Aria Lipscomb,
Mia Wilson,
Emma Priester,
Sarah Pepper,
Casey Mayfield,
Emily Austin,
Libby Cave,
Sarah Butler. Thanks again so much for supporting the show. We could not do it without you.
Thanks so much, guys. Keep it creepy.
Sinister.